There's an issue that I think is very, very critical to be aware of and to be prepared for in terms of dealing with it and helping people with it and preventing it, because it has become more and more prevalent, relevant, prominent today than I think in, you know, the past generation or maybe past generations. And that is, there are many, many people, adults, usually adults, sometimes teenage adults, but, you know, it's an adult type of a thing, that all of a sudden wake up one day, and it's not really all of a sudden, I have to qualify that, but they wake up one day, we'll talk about what wakes them up maybe, but they wake up one day and they just decide and realize, hey, I'm doing all these things, I'm not sure why I'm doing it, I'm not sure what it's all about, I'm not sure what level of conviction I have, and yet, I'm doing all these things. And they start to wonder whether, you know, maybe it's not real. Maybe I shouldn't be doing it. Maybe I don't want to be doing it. Maybe I'm not really who I think I am or what I think I am. Different things like that. Now, generally speaking, and I do have a lot of experience with this because I speak to a lot of people in this situation over the years, many. It generally coincides with some other stimulus. Tragedy, depression, disappointment, some almost unrelated and sometimes completely unrelated trigger. But it sort of puts me in a depressed or compromised or uncomfortable or disappointing mood, and then I feel like I start to question my whole existence. And it happens a lot, and it's not crazy. In a very blank way, it makes sense. I'm not sure what the word is there. But, you know, in an illogical way, it makes sense. In a warped way, it makes sense. In a confused way, it makes sense. I'm not sure. But it makes some sense because, like, you know, everything is not going well. I'm not happy with my matzav. I could be. I'm not happy with my job. I'm not happy with my children. I'm not happy with my marriage. I'm not happy with my looks. I'm not happy with my with something bad or tragic that took place, and something triggered it. And then, so I look at myself and I start and I say, yeah, well, what's my life all about anyway? You know, and I guess maybe it's like, it could be, and this is just a theory, and this is probably true only part of the time. It could be that because I'm now in an uncomfortable position and I don't seem to feel that my religious persona is able to get me out of it, is able to make me, you know, make me whole again, to put me together again. So I start to question whether it's real. I start to question, maybe I'm not really caring, religious, committed, whatever, devoted, dedicated. So it works in many strange ways, but there's usually a connection between some level of disappointment and or confusion or pain or hurt, and then the unraveling of who I really am. And what I would like to point out and to discuss is that the circumstances that happen and the emotional reaction to them are far from our control. That's true. But the prevention of it by strengthening the level of appreciation, understanding, commitment, passion, feeling, reality, deep-rooted convictions that a person has, those will certainly help to help a person to be able to fight or to be able to be not so damaged or affected or imbalanced by these difficulties that arise. And therefore, I think it's very important to discuss that whole topic. Now, I think that one of the reasons that this is more prevalent today than it used to be is because, I guess I could call it in a borrowed terminology, religion by choice. Religion by choice really means converting to another religion. But I would say the Yiddishkeit of our parents and our grandparents' generation was more religion by choice. You know, they not the shtetl already, that's 3-4 generations ago, but the last 2 generations of people who remained religious, and even yeshiva people and what have you, it was religion by choice. The world, the yeshiva world, was very small. If I chose to go to yeshiva in the 1940s, forget about the 50s and 60s in this country, it was a choice. It was a conviction. It was a, there was strong motivation. There was not, I certainly wasn't going to yeshiva because everybody's going. Go with the flow. Everyone's doing it. No, everybody was not doing it. It was already, you know, people were doing other things. So Mamela, there was more choice. Now, once there's choice, there's already a certain level of commitment because this is what I want to do. Today's world, we have a problem that people are just, everyone's doing it. I mean, we sort of have succeeded to some extent to cloister and to close our gates, not necessarily physically, but in a certain socially or sociologically, or I don't know, and we keep our communities sort of you know, separate as much as possible, as much as possible. And what?
Separate from goyim?
Well, no, from goyim, from not religious people, you know. And therefore, it's like, that's what you do. You're part of this community, you do it. And sometimes it takes a wake-up call, a bad one, a tragic event, a disturbing event, something, that makes me think and say, hey, wait a second. I really never made the decision to be here in the first place. And it's a very traumatic type of a challenge that a person has when he comes to that realization. So I think what we have to address is, I guess there's a few points, a few steps. Point number one is we have to learn to not to take for granted. And we're talking about children and students now. We're not even talking about ourselves. Hopefully, you know, we're at a point where we feel strength, but not to take for granted that we're just, you know, everybody's going in the right way. A Rebbe, a teacher, a parent has to really recognize that not only if I take things for granted will I mess up and overlook red flags, danger signs, you know, problems that might be lurking, but It isn't even a healthy situation just to assume that everybody is going the right way. I'll never forget, I remember that like today in Los Angeles, a certain woman who worried about her children marrying Jewish. That was her biggest daiga. Her biggest daiga that her children should marry Jewish. And she once says to me, you don't have to worry about such things. And I remember telling her, I said, I gotta tell you, Mrs. So-and-so, that until my youngest child, my last child, is happily married, you don't have to worry about these things. Can't take anything for granted. Can't take anything for granted. And the more we take for granted, the more we just assume everyone's gonna do what everybody else is gonna do, just the way they did it. You know, or my oldest child did this, so the next one's going to follow, the next one's going to follow, the next one's going to follow. The kids do it. Yeah, last year's kids did it. Okay, they did it. The sixth grade did it last year. This year, sixth grade is going to do the same thing. It's a it's a dangerous mistake, because it doesn't work that way. That's point number one. So let's not take anything for granted. We have to be alert that that's number one. Number two, many times these problems can be seen earlier on. And I'm not talking about the psychological piece. That's a completely separate thing. And that too, parents and teachers should be trained to recognize the early signs of psychological issues. Obviously, trauma and tragedy outside, you can't recognize it. It happens. It's beyond our control. But there are some, but we're not even talking about that. But just the attitude, you know, they say that the altar from Slabodka, would look at the way a person puts down his tefillin in the morning. Not puts on, but, you know, puts down a sefer like this, and he would read in that where they're holding in their Yiddishkeit, whether it's passion, feeling, excitement, respect, lack of full appreciation, maybe even a little zilzul. And now, I don't think we should learn, or we should assume that we could read those signs. Those signs are really very sophisticated, and maybe you got to be this master psychologist and maven on human koiches hanefesh to be able to see that. But there are signs that we see. We see attitude. We see certain people. We could see negativity. We could see people feeling a certain emptiness. We could tell whether there's feeling. We could tell sometimes whether the feeling is coming from the heart or coming from the social scene. In other words, everybody's doing it, so I'm going to pretend to be feeling also. And sometimes a keen observer can see, yeah, this doesn't seem real. This person doesn't seem to be. And, you know, sometimes you see certain things that tell you, yeah, if this was really real, then why are they like this, and why are they so upset, and why, yeah. And we have to watch out for these things. If the sooner that we can spot in someone the lack of real appreciation of the chinuch that they're getting, the more we can try to compensate, talk to them, see what issues are bothering them, you know, explain things better to them. But besides that, we should be doing this for everybody. We should really go in with an assumption that, and I believe that's the assumption, because I could say it this way, even those that succeed in running with the mill, so to speak, they're going with the flow, that's not success. It's not success at all. What are you talking about? The whole world, the world of Chinuch is so successful. We have such payers, we have such products, we have such accomplishments. You know something? How do you measure accomplishment? How do you measure accomplishment? What? Do you you measure accomplishment
one,
by
two,
what?
2, 3, 4, 5. Oh,
yeah, okay, no. Who, I should have asked the question more specifically, I'm sorry. No. You can't measure it that way. You know why? Because you first have to know how to measure a tzaddik. How do you measure a tzaddik? What? There's a test. You put up 613 mitzvahs, and you see how many of them that he keeps. What? You know how you measure a tzaddik? The only way to measure a tzaddik is against his own potential and ability. There is no other way. Okay, now, amech kulam tzaddikim. You hear? Shh, please let me finish. Amech kulam tzaddikim. Okay, everybody here tzaddikim. Everybody, look at this. They're all doing. They all look alike. They talk alike. They act alike. They learn that this. You walk in, you see a sea of white, or a sea of black, or a sea of white and black, or black and white, or whatever you see. You know, C-E-S-E-A, U-S-E-E, S-E-A, you know, whatever, you know, and pink too. Okay, yeah, and what? So that's what. That is an absurd measure of success. The only way to measure success is to look at each individual and to see this is where he's coming from, because success, growth is from where you come, not where you are. Number two, what his koiches are. what his potential is, what his nisyonis are, his life circumstances, and then you take it all together, and who knows how to judge these things. You know, the Rambam says that the real judgment of these things is only bedas keil deyos, only Hashem can judge. We have to judge as much as we can to see, and then you get a sense of, you know, whether you really succeeded or not. So we can't assume, because everybody seems to be, you know, look what they're doing, look what they're going, look the way they're, you know, that doesn't mean anything, because that's not measuring them against any, what's the word in science? Control. It's not measuring against any controlled experiment. You don't see, it's not really a controlled experiment, but you don't see who he is, who he could be, who he should be, who he could have been, and measure him up to that. So we can't assume that. What we have to assume is that everybody needs chizuk, and everybody needs inspiration, and everybody needs to feel more, number one, more ownership of his religious experiences, of his learning, of his Yiddishkeit. He needs to feel more ownership, has to do, by the way, with choice. This is where I want to be. This is what I want to be. When I feel ownership and when I want to be here and I'm doing what I want to do because I want to do it, then I do it in an entirely different way. Then I have a chance of maximizing my potential. So we certainly have to see now, if we see people, so some people, yeah, they seem to be poised for this greatness, that's beautiful. But some people, they're far from that. So what do we have to do? We have to work with them. We have to help them. We have to guide them. We have to, people sometimes, many people, most people need to know, well, why? Why should I want to do this? What's the goal? What's the benefit? What's the short-term benefit? What's the long-term benefit? What's my purpose? What am I really here about? What's going to make me happy in life? How can I fulfill this mission that I'm supposed to fulfill? And a person has to have a sense of, it really means something to me. A person also has to have a sense, and this is critical, of his capability to fulfill his mission. You know, probably two of the most powerful words, I guess it's three of the most powerful words, are, I believe in you. Four, I believe in you. I can't even count, but it's not real. Mathematics, arithmetic is not one of the things you need for this business, okay? That you could do on a calculator. So, but I believe in you. When you believe in someone, now, depends who you are. If you're a cockroach and you believe in him, then it's not going to do too much for him. But if you're a psashtickle mensch and you believe in someone, that gives him a sense of, hey, there's something going on here. I have some shaychus. I have some potential. I have some kuychus. And that, too, is a critical ingredient. Besides just knowing that there is a purpose, what is the purpose? What's the benefit? What's in it for me? What am I doing? What am I supposed to be doing? Why should I do it? What will I get from it? What's the point of the whole thing? But I also have to feel I'm capable. Because if I don't feel that I'm capable, then it's almost like, if I'm not capable, I have to nix it. If I'm not capable, I have to deny it. If I'm not capable, I have to destroy it. If I'm not capable, I have to curse it. Because it's so important, it's so beneficial, it's so great, but I have no shaykhah, so I can't live like that. That's very bad. So it's these two factors that, and we have to nurture people like this. People have to have a sense of that. What nurtures people? Well, first of all, there has to be a lot of explanation as to what Yahadus is all about. And unfortunately, most people tell us who are drifting that, I never really appreciated it. I just did it because everybody was doing it. I didn't know what it's, so I really didn't understand it. It didn't make a lot of sense to me. I didn't understand, what am I doing? What am I trying to accomplish? Why do I have to do it? Yeah, well, okay, you know, like the shteit geschriben in the Torah, which was that was the call to going to becoming irreligious of the early 20th century, when they asked why I can't do this and why I have to do this, why I can do this, and the answer was by this Yiddish speaking generation, shteit geschriben in the Torah, says it's written in the Torah. It turned people off, because why? What? Who's the Torah? Mi Hashem Asher Eshma B'Koylo, like Paroi said. Like it didn't, you know, they have to first, even a doctor, you go to a doctor, Ki Ani Hashem Roifecho, but you go to a doctor where you've seen his credentials, where you've checked him out online, and you see all the what degrees. Are they, right? The what?
All the degrees, yes.
The degrees is half of it, but the The what?
Reviews.
The reviews. That's the word I was looking for. You see all the reviews he has. That's really what it's about. So, you know, this is they don't have this sense. So they have to have that. And then they also have to have the ability to believe in themselves. If they don't have the ability to believe in themselves, it's very, very hard. And not only that, it works in the opposite, because this, the more this becomes important, the more important it is for me to believe in myself. Because if I don't believe in myself, the more important this becomes, the more I have to fight it, the more I have to negate it, the more I have to ignore it, the more I have to despise it, because it's not going to be for me. So I don't want to see this world of this potential happiness and greatness and fulfillment and everything to be there when I feel I have no shaychus to it. I can't even connect with it. I can't approach it. So Memela, this is something else. Now, I think that there's another piece that's really very significant, and this is as parents and as teachers as well. And this is a little bit of a there's nothing wrong with a session like this, but that is that most of this stuff needs private conversation. Because even though these issues are fairly common with most people that are involved, in other words, they're similar issues, the dynamic is pretty much the same, but everybody has their own nuances. Everybody has their own hang-ups. Everybody has their own emotional baggage, which works to create these issues and these questions. And therefore, if we deal with them with group therapy, let's say, or lectures, forget, lectures are the worst thing. Is, you know, nobody listens to lectures, right? Yeah. So that's you know, so but it has to be so, and therefore we have to be willing to spend individual time with our children, each one with his or her specific issues and questions, be attuned to it. The last time I spoke, I think be prepared for it, have to be familiar with the sugyas that are involved, so we know what to answer, how to explain, how to communicate, you know, these different values and insights. And then it has to be, the most critical point is we have to listen. We have to hear what they have to say. And here we're not talking about empathetic listening just to show someone that you feel their pain. Here we're talking about a listening which will give us insight as to what we have to tell them and what, you know, how we have to deal with the issues that they're dealing with. And the more that this can be done, and it's very time consuming, if you have a big family, to spend quality time with each one individually and having these conversations, not Shabbos table talk, although certain things are good at the Shabbos table, you know, general concepts, but how each person is getting it is individualized. And certainly if you have a classroom, and certainly if you have a moysid, that it's difficult. You have to be able to find the time to spend with each one to see what's bothering them and to, you know, and to deal with their issues and their slant on the issues, their angle, the specific confusions that they have, which come up in talking and conversation. But I think this is, these things are very, very important. And unfortunately today, we're in a society where our numbers are great. I have to tell you, one of our books over here, I once wrote that the part of the root of the problem that we're having today is the large size of our classrooms and our schools, and the large sizes of our families. And my kids, of course, made me edit that out, because that sounds like I was advocating family planning or birth control. You know, I couldn't leave that in a book.
Were you?
What? Were you? No, but what I did mean to say is it actually is part of the problem, because as you have a larger family, it's harder to find the time to deal with each one as the individual that he or she really is. But unless you do that, you're going to miss a lot of the specific nuances and issues that this one has and this one doesn't have. So this one has certain issues, that's another issue. El, am I going to group them together? Well, all those who have issue number 1, 3, 4, and 7, you stand over here. All those who have, it doesn't work that way, you know. So it's very time intensive, and that's why, and certainly in a moisset, in a classroom, in the yeshiva, it's much more difficult because of the fact that, that you know, you have a lot of people and limited amount of time. But I think this is something that we have to be very, very sensitive to, because if we don't deal with these, or I would say like this, the more that we neglect these issues in the younger years, the more they come back to haunt certain people in the later years. And sometimes that haunting is very tragic, because today we see a phenomenon. I must admit, it's probably why this is on my mind. I just dealt with one an hour ago, where married people who, grew up in a frum home, a frum society, went to the right schools and everything. At some point in life, something triggers exactly what you see. Something triggers an upheaval, a trauma, some depression, some issue, and unfortunately, then they start questioning themselves and what am I doing and what am I, what do I know and what do I think and what do I care and who am I really, and they question their whole existence. And unless they were well prepared, and generally speaking, most people are not well prepared, and generally speaking, most people can't answer the questions that they have themselves when they fall into this matzav. So it could be very, very, and it is very, very dangerous, and that's why a lot of people are adults, family people, children. It's so pathetic, and they're just, divorce, getting running away, pretending. It's serious, and I think that the chinuch system has to address these things early on in very individual and specific detail. People have to have a sense of why we're living in this world. Why were we created? What is my mission? And how is my mission going to make me feel happy and accomplished? And they have to know that, I mentioned once, they also have to know that there's a world beyond this world, because otherwise there's certain things you can't explain. But they also have to know the second parsha of Kriyat Shema, the Kabbalah's oil mitzvahs that we say, La'avas Hashem Elokeichem of the B'chol Levavchem, has with it the recognition that there are, rewards and consequences in this world. And they have to know that too. Especially the rewards. The consequences can be a little scary. I have to know that too, but some people get very nervous about that. But they have to know it. It's real. And if they have a greater sense of what I'm doing and why I'm doing it and how I benefit from it and what's the specific purpose and what's the global, purpose, and makes things easier. And then also, and just want to conclude with this, is that people have sometimes questions, emunah questions, other questions, and they don't get answered, but they go with the flow. And then when things start unraveling, that's when they start thinking, I always had that question anyway, was never got a good answer to it. Everything comes together. And so there's a lot, I think, that we can do if we're sensitive to this issue, and requires a lot of work maybe on our part, and it's worth it because it can make the difference in future generations.